test of the original personality of the gigantic form is the luminary planetary system. His neck is the Maha planets. His mouth is the Jhanas planets. And his forehead is the Tapas planetary system. The topmost planetary system, known as Sataloka, is the head of he who has 1,000 heads. The effulgent luminary planets, like the sun and the moon, are situated almost in the mid-place of the universe, and as such they are to be known as the chest of the original gigantic form of the Lord. And above the luminary planets, called also the heavenly planets of the universal directive, and above the luminary planets, called the heavenly planets of the universal directorate demigods, are the Maha, Jhanas and Tapas planetary systems. And above all, the Satyaloka planetary system, where the chief directors of the modes of material nature reside, namely Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. This Vishnu is known as the Kiridayakshayi Vishnu, and he acts as a supersoul in every living being. There are innumerable universes floating on the causal ocean, and in each of them the representation of the Virat form of the Lord is there, along with innumerable suns, moons, heavenly demigods, Brahmas, Vishnus and Shivas. All of them are situated in one part of the inconceivable potency of Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:42. In which Krishna says, what is the need of all this detailed knowledge, Arjuna? You know that all these opulences constitutes a single spark of my splendor, or words to that effect. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Uttaresi Mukti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itti Namai Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachamini Vishesha Sandhavari Paschatizatari. Translation again, the chest of the original personality of the gigantic form is the luminary planetary system. His neck is the Maha planets, his mouth is the Jhanas planets, and his forehead is the Tapas planetary system. The topmost planetary system, known as Sataloka, is the head of he who has 1,000 heads. We're beginning this description of the universal form of the Lord, Virat Rupa, also described in Bhagavad Gita. This Srila Prabhupada mentions is a more or less an imaginary form of the Lord. Although Arjuna saw that form, Krishna says this form has never been seen before anymore. And that full form like that. So it was more or less, Srila Prabhupada said, for deified devotees who think that because God must be everywhere, then he must have a huge form like that. I never felt like that personally, but there was one devotee who came here. He joined here, and he was saying that the Lord must have such a big form, he must be everywhere throughout the universe. I said, why? He said, he must, because he's God, he's everywhere, he must have that huge form. It never dawned on me that like that, but this devotee had that, and then he was very happy when he read the universal form, the picture of the universe, about the universal form. So we're going to describe all of the again we're describing the vibhutis of the Lord. This chapter is entitled "The First Step in God Realization." And first of all, we have to come to the realization of the understanding how great God is. Remember, we're here in the material world because we're trying to compete with God. So first, we have to change. We have to reverse our mentality. So it begins with accepting someone's greater than me. This is the first step in God realization. And here, we then when one becomes pious, one actually turns towards, starts to inquiring about God, which is quite evolved. To be a religious person, a sincere religious person, is quite evolved amongst the human species. That they want to actually find out who that God is, which is even more evolved, because most people don't really interested in finding out about who God is, if you ask anyone. They really don't want to know about who God is, or you know, what his activities are, or what it's really like on the kingdom of God. Generally, they don't really want to know. They know that it's much better than here, and they'll follow the rules here so we can go there. But apart from that, there's not really a lot of interest. So it's rare, there's even more rare, more evolved. The one actually wants to understand about the personality of Godhead. So here's the description for those that we need that in the beginning to understand that everything is actually contained in God, and he is contained in everything. As a super soul, this is even more advanced. But for the beginning, we should understand how great God is, how fantastic he is, why he's great, because he creates all this wonderful. He displays this wonderful energy, which is tremendous and fantastic for us. You know, it's mind-boggling. We're only still trying to figure out what is the closest planet, what it may be like on the closest planet by our mundane methods. still trying for that, you know, after. And we're supposed to be advanced. Of course, this is modern. But this comes and goes as the yugas come and go, and the cycles go round and round. So sometimes it's the annihilation comes, and, or partial annihilation, full annihilation, Satya, Raja, the modes are predominant in different times and spaces, like in Satya Yuga and Kali Yuga. And then everything is forgotten over a few years, a few generations, everything becomes forgotten. Then you start again and you think, we're the most wonderful, this is the most wonderful thing, it's all in all. So this Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic literatures, they give us this timeless information of the cosmic situation and beyond the actual spiritual situation, which is always there. So that can keep us. We don't have to do all the experimentation has already been done. It's already fact. But as far as you can experiment, how far can you experiment? You see, here we're reading about the planets above the luminaries, above the heavenly planets, this Maha, Jnana, Tapas, Satya. It's inconceivable for the modern day people. This is explained, then it must be fantasy. How can you know? We can't even know the nearest planet. We're trying to find out the atmosphere which is around it, or the suns which are over it, whatever. But we're talking, they're talking here, way beyond that, way beyond these things, these planets. And that's fantastic. It's fantastic for the devotees and it's fantastic for the atheists. So fantastic they can't believe it. It becomes too fantastic for them. It must be a fairy tale. It's not within our, we can't grasp that. It simply depends, how do you know? We've heard. Oh, just faith. What happens if it's wrong? Putting all your eggs in one basket, what happens if it's wrong? Finished. No, so we'll progress. So we want, you see the big scientists, you know, we're not, if you present this, we don't say it's wrong. They'll say that, some of them, the decent ones. But right now we're going on this, we're following these lines. You know, we're not saying that's wrong, but right now this is the way we're going. Actually it's that way. The more you try to understand it, it's all practically speaking what you're dealing with. There's earth, water, fire, and air. What they're dealing with, you know, the eight elements, and that's ignorance. It's based on. So that's what they're searching. They're searching the ignorance. But again, actually, further and further away from the reality. In the name of search searching for truth. So I thought we'd read from the something from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which describes the situation on these planets a little bit. I don't know where else it describes, because it's rare. It's rarely to get any description of the what goes on in the spiritual worlds and the, even the higher planets. But it's important because we have to build a temple of the Vedic planetarium. So we want to know. We have to create the same atmosphere. Artists, are you listening? Get your brushes ready. We have to try to create the same atmosphere. Prabhupada wanted to, as you inside the big temple, there's another temple of Radha Madhava and the Panchatattva and the Guru Parampara. Then around that, he wants a revolving staircase, a revolving thing which goes up, like spiraling up to the top. And then at your pass, you get off in the different lokas, starting from Patala, and then you gradually get off, and you see, and they have dioramas and exhibitions in there, what it's like if you visit this planet. So by the time you get to the top, then you, and by the time you come out anyway, you should be should be a different person. That's the idea. And then on top is the Golok, the Radha Krishna and the Gopis. So that was Prabhupada's vision. So, but how to understand, or anyway, we have a job now. Some sections of ISKCON have a job trying to convince the how to conform with the modern day thinking. A devotee here the other day was working on it. How to conform? He really was pressurized into thinking how are we going to convince him of this? How are we going to do it? That was his thing. How are we going to present it in such a way that you won't be able to do it? That's what I said. So how are you? I said, you won't be able to do it. We got to. I said, how are you going to do it? You can't prove the existence of the soul. You can't prove the existence of God. Only anyone, if someone is a little bit normal or reasonable, they'll accept. There's so much, you know, logic, and by use of intelligence you can easily understand. You're different from the body, and there must be a supreme creator. But these guys will never do that. They're the four kinds of people, Krishna says. They never surrender to me. You're never going to convince them. Krishna will always give them a loophole to, Krishna will always give that intelligence to them. So that's what happened. But who cares about them? Anyway, they're only actually a few. Most people are innocent in this world. So there's only a few, but unfortunately they're running things. They're saying what is. But if you convince the masses or the general, but then they have to follow. Otherwise, they won't lose their jobs. So, and who cares anyway? It's a few people. If you convince the masses, that's what we want to do. We want to get the people to become devotees. So they go back to Godhead. Let the others stay if they want. Try and figure it out themselves. But the common people don't want that. They're not interested in all this stuff normally. So anyway, Gop Kumar, you know the story of Gop Kumar. He travels throughout the universe in his search to find. He's actually a Brijbasi Gop. He's a Gopa. He's a devotee of Krishna. But the storyline is he's like really innocent, really naive. He doesn't know what's going on. He's given a mantra any chance, and he finds it helps him a lot by a Brijbasi. And he's seeking the topmost thing, and he's passing through all the different recommended to different persons. We know the story, I think most of us. And then he gets up to Indraloka. By the mercy of Krishna. So the storyline is like this: what is bhakti, how it compares, and how all the other things are related to it. This is the underlying theme of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can see perspective from the bhakti vision. So he's taken the form of a very naive young boy as the bhakti. He's actually, Krishna's in his, he really wants to see that Krishna in Vrindavan. So anyway, he gets to Indraloka, and somehow or other Indra misbehaves with some sage's wife, as he sometimes does, and he hides. So there's no Indra. So you can become Indra. So he becomes the Indra and enjoying like that. So one day, then he says some great sages arrived, headed by Bhrigu, and they were on their way to purify with their feet the holy places on the earth. They come down to sanctify the holy places and the Ganga by taking bath, etc. Then he said, with amazement I looked down, so all the demigods and celestial sages and even their spiritual master and Lord Vishnu himself, because Vishnu is also around on a heavenly planet, so he helps them too. They worship in these sages. So in his naivety he says, who are these people? We're on heaven, you know, who are these people? He says, I was a new resident of Swag. My heart was distracted by the bliss of serving Lord Krishna, so I failed to recognize the sages worshipping Lord Vishnu. But at the urging of my companions too, I worshipped them. They said, these are great sages, you should also worship. So then the sages blessed him and went on their way. And then so he asked the demigods, who were those people? Even the demigods are worshipping them. What makes them so great? Where do these effulgent people live? He says, jealous and proud, the demigods were embarrassed to tell him. They didn't want to say anything. I mean, they're better than us, you know. But then Brihaspati spoke, the guru. He's a bit more sober than all the others. He said, about this realm shines another world called the Mahaloka, attainable through the best of pious works. Even when the three worlds are annihilated, that world is not destroyed. As the happiness of Indraloka is considered millions of times greater than as a ruler on earth, the happiness of a Prajapati is millions of times greater than that of Indra's. Endowed with such happiness, the Prajapatis live on Mahaloka. Sometimes we say the moon, right? Oh, that's a picture, isn't it? Prajapatis means the original progenitors of the species. So they're actually, the demigods also originate from them. Although there's a prototype government, they actually originate from all these Prajapatis. So they live on Mahaloka, enjoying the greatest pleasure and directly worshipping in various places the Lord of Sacrifice, who is there in person as their master. So all these people on Maha, they're practically liberated, almost, because that planet lasts as long as the life of Brahma. Because like these are candidates for liberation when you reach Mahaloka. When you get past Swargaloka, that means the desire to enjoy in the material world, that's peaks at Mahaloka. Then it gets more subtle from then on, and it's more the desire for liberation, to become free from the material things. And then, as soon as he heard that, he says, I once lost my attachment to the post of Indra and wanted to go and see that supreme being, being worshipped by the great souls who are worshipped by those who are worshipped. So then I made this my intention and chanted my mantra, and soon a celestial aeroplane picked me up and I found myself transported to Mahaloka. He chanted the Maha Mantra. Such happiness, opulence and worship of the Lord is found nowhere in the three worlds. It is all there, perfectly indescribable by words. Here they worship in the Yajna Purush, the Lord, by their performing fire sacrifices. And the Lord actually, when they're offering, he actually appears from the fire and accepts our offerings and deals very intimately with them. And that place is so subtle, it's so fine. It says, because everyone is without selfish motivation. They're not self-interested there. they're merely intent on seeing the Lord and serving the Lord in sacrifice. And as such, everything is perfect there. Just here, things are imperfect because of our mentality, because of our selfish mentality. Therefore, there's so many problems on the earth. But if everyone develops a selfless mentality, things will be here like swaga. Because there's the demigods, they supply the necessities of life, they maintain everything. and so if people were pious and not selfish, that means they'll be given respects where it's due, or worship where it's due, then the place here will become like swarga. And Srila Prabhupada even mentions that depending on the king, he can act, how pious the king is and how well he controls the subjects, that he can make even Kali Yuga become Dwapara Yuga again. If the king makes everyone pious, then it won't be Kali Yuga anymore. This is theoretically speaking, if it's possible. So, and it says because of their selflessness, everything is available for them. Whatever they need for Jagga, it's there. They don't have to work on it. It's there. There's no lacking and there's no surplus. Exactly what they need is actually supplied. Such a nice place. And Sanatana Goswami says that this place can, the condition of such a subtle, exclusive environment can hardly be described in words. It can only be understood by direct experience. Nevertheless, Sanatana Goswami gives us a rare glimpse into a world we otherwise know little about. So while they was worshipping, then the Lord stood up from the fire. And everyone became very satisfied. He was very bright, radiant as millions of suns. His mighty form enchanting the world, reached out his hands, accepting the true offerings, and granted the sacrifices benedict. The true is something you put on the fire. It's like a sweet rice. It's heavy ghee, a lot of ghee in it, and sweet rice. And sometimes we use it here, on the maha. So that's that. They're offering in the fire, and he's actually taking it, and he's eating it, and he's giving them benedictions and smiling. And can you imagine? Jagga proves it. And giving them whatever they benedictions they asked. And with words drenched with compassion, he gave me his own hand. With his own hand, Mahaprasad, he gave him some of his remnants to take. Awestruck by the sight of him, out of sheer joy, I felt compelled to bow down. By that Lord's abundant mercy, I attained an exceptional bliss I had never known before, and all my desires were fulfilled. I wandered here in the company of the great compassionate sages. In every dwelling, I saw the Lord of the universe present in the same way. In other words, in every residence, they were performing these things, and the Lord was appearing in every house, all in bliss. Thinking myself fully successful in every respect, I happily took up residence at Mahaloka. At once the sages spoke to me as follows. They said, "O son of a cowherd, we are offering you Brahminical status, natural for a resident of this planet. Please accept it. Become one of the exalted sages, that you too may worship the Lord of sacrifice, who for so long has been the desired goal of your life." Then, in other words, everything give him, make him a Brahmin, a Vaishya, Gopa. Then he was thinking, I'd be happy staying a Vaishya, because then I could keep worshipping both the Lord and the Brahmanas and his devotees. If I was a Brahmin, I wouldn't be able to worship, they wouldn't accept it. If I'm a Vaishya, that's a duty. So his naivety was keeping him away from that. How his bhakti is actually protecting him from being a ritualistic. He says, "For these Brahmanas, performing the sacrifice is the only interest in life. If I were to become one of them, I would also become lax in chanting. I am duty bound to continue. My divine guru taught me to worship this mantra, and besides, I've already seen its good results. Therefore, while showing respect to the sages, I declined the sages of Brahman, of a Brahmana, but I stayed on Mahaloka, enjoying the exalted pleasures that automatically appear in the world of Prajapatis. On that place there are no faults, no sorrows, no apprehensiveness. There was nothing but festivals of sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord. But at the end of each sacrifice, unhappiness would arise when the Lord disappeared. He brings you bliss, but when he goes, then he's gone again. And when the Lord reappeared, another sacrifice, happiness would begin again. So at the end of 1,000 cycles of ages, for that place one day, he stayed up there. That was only one day. Then the conflagration of the three words forced us to take refuge on Jhanaloka, and then in other words partial annihilation to start taking place. So the fire got up, they all had to move up to Jhanaloka, where Jhanaloka the fire doesn't reach up there, I guess it's a little warm, it doesn't get too uncomfortable. But the Maha, it gets too hot, they have to move up. The Jhana and Tapa, then it's okay. So he said there, on Jhanaloka, as if it were night time, no sacrifices were being performed, and the pain of not seeing the Lord of Sacrifices borne more greatly than burning fire of the three worlds. So because it was time of annihilation, there was nothing going on. You know, everything had stopped. So for him, and he just left seeing the Lord. And for there was nothing, because I think maybe the Lord takes rest at that time, I'm not sure. But anyway, there wasn't much going on. So he was a little disappointed, nothing happening there. He said, better I go to Puri, checking out Puri, because in Puri it says, what is it? Then I thought it would be better to go see Lord Jagannath in Kshetram, in Purushottam Kshetram, in the shade of the infallible banyan tree, because it says even when the three worlds are destroyed, that place stays as it is. So he heard that, he learned that. At least I can see Jagannath there. So then he went back to Mahaloka. And then he began to chant his mantra, and he became a little anxious to return to Vrindavan again. But then when the Jagya Purush would call him over, then he would forget all about that and be in great bliss again, and he would have great nice reciprocation with the Lord, and all his doubts and things would go away, feeling great ecstasy. And that, just by hoping that next time he come I'm going to see him again, that kept him going, and he stopped thinking of going anywhere else. But once, someone arrived from a higher planet, whose form surrounded by brilliant light. He was dressed by the directions. He appeared like a 5 or 6 year old boy. And all the sages put aside their sacrificial rituals, stood up with devotion, bowed down to the boy, absorbed in meditation, and worshipped him as if he were the Lord of Sacrifice himself. The Maharishi said, this person is Sanat Kumara, the eldest among us, and he is the greatest. He is the first preceptor of the self-consented sages, whose desires are always fulfilled, and he's a lifelong celibate. He lives in a world above ours called Tapaloka, with his three brothers and other great mystics who, like him, are masters of yogas. That world is attainable by only unbroken celibacy. Its residents, their semen retained flowing upwards, feel a constant peace and happiness millions of times greater than enjoyed by the progenitors of the universe. Especially for householders like that person is worthy of worship as much as the Lord of Sacrifice himself, for he has renounced all material duties. So even on Mahaloka they're having families, social life. Then Gokumar wondered, what kind of happiness do they enjoy in Tapaloka? How many more are they like him, and what kind of Lord do they worship? So he's very eager to go there, so he chanted his mantra again, and he quickly appeared at that place. Then he met Sanat Kumara and his brothers. He said all the residents appeared similar to the Kumaras. The Kumaras had the body, kept bodies of about 5-year-old youths, boys. And they was enjoying themselves by having long discussions, incomprehensible to persons like me. These are Mahaganis up there. So he's way over his head what they were talking about. But they was getting great ecstasy discussing all this wonderful philosophy and details about the Lord. From seeing those brothers on Tapaloka, I felt an intense, spontaneous joy. Well, then they went off to their respective places to absorb themselves in meditation. I started wondering, searching always for the Lord of the universe. Not seeing him anywhere, I tried to inquire of the great sages, but as soon as I stood before them offering prayers and obeisances, they did not even look at me. They were all fixed in samadhi. Everyone's there. They're all in samadhi. They're all self-satisfied, lifelong celibates, full in the achievement of all desires, served by mystic perfections. They're all Atmarama. So he's asking thing, and they're completely oblivious. What's going on here? But anyway, his desire to see the Lord was still there. And because of the influence of that place and the company of the sages, his desire to see the Lord started to dwindle. Because he's completely self-satisfied there. This is one of the dangers it's pointing out with bhakti, that you get attached to this thing, idea of liberation, and he told him, why do you want to leave this disordered place and go somewhere else? Why are you wandering around just to see the Supreme Lord with your eyes? You should concentrate your mind in meditation, then you'll naturally see the Lord everywhere, within and without. Just as he was before you in person. Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Soul, the embodiment of eternity, knowledge and bliss, reveals himself in a thoroughly purified heart and nowhere else. This is our philosophy. Then with nothing else going in the mind, direct vision of Lord Hari within one's eyes takes place in one's heart. You see the Lord. When the... like Dhruva or Lord Brahma, he gives those examples. See, they saw it, they were actually perceiving it. Why do you want to go and run after him and see him with those eyes, which are just, you know, mere sense organs? When the mind is happy, all the senses are automatically happy, for the functions of the senses, speech, vision, hearing and so on, are included within those of the mind. So he says, the mind, without the functions of the mind, the functions of all the senses are useless. Because even if one acts, one deeds will be as if never performed, because the self will be unable to perceive them. In other words, the perception is done through the mind, from the senses through the mind, to the soul is perceiving through the mind primarily. So then he's given a whole discourse on Gyan, how he should, you know, do this. So he's going on and on, and it's really good philosophy. It's a very wonderful story. Then it goes on that an argument begins between the Shrutis and the Smritis and the Puranas and the, like that. What is actually, they get up to liberation. What is better, actually liberation or service, like this? Anyway, it's very interesting. But this would give us some insight that Gokumar, by the mercy of his guru and the mantra that his guru gave him, managed to pass by all these wonderful things, which never really actually satisfied him. So this is the thing: the soul can never be completely satisfied anywhere within the three worlds. So the soul will be satisfied when it's situated in its constitutional position of serving the Lord with the senses. So even though the Gyanis, the wranglers, they will say that it's all going on in the mind anyway, it is a fact. Therefore, you don't You don't need any. You don't need anything else. But ultimately, they actually, you know, they actually want. Although they mainly it's liberation, but still they get that. They do get the bliss of actually seeing the Lord and perceiving the Lord. And even in our philosophy, Smaranam is the highest thing. Shravanam Kirtan Smaranam is to remember Krishna always is the highest thing. But they don't. But they say then everything goes on within the mind. But that in the spiritual world, that is manifest outside of the mind. The service, the form, all everything goes on in reality. There in the spiritual world is like that. They kind of get the same thing in their mind, but still it's not the same. It's not gonna be the same as explained later on. So by the mercy of Guru and his service to Guru, his devotion to the mantra and Guru, then he's carried through that. He managed to pass through all of these we would call obstacles, the wonderful, beautiful, attractive obstacles of the different planetary systems, which we actually, you know, they wouldn't be they're not obstacles for us now. We'd probably get off at the first stop, but for the pure devotees, they're actually obstacles in the way, because they're so attractive, exactly what you want, all the pleasures, unimaginable pleasures, or unimaginable peace and liberation, unimaginable that you never experienced. that's what's being offered all the way up. And the finer one gets, the more purified one gets. But they are actually all, they're all temporary. They're all within the material creation, all within this world. And there's, and this is just one, as Krishna says, as Prabhupada mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, this is just a fragment of my opulence is what I'm speaking. There's millions of universes, so there's millions of Brahmas, there's millions of stories like this, billions of them. And it's all one breath of Vishnu, they're all gone. So what is the actual real value, lasting value, what you want, what you're actually looking for? But we don't know that. We've forgotten that, so therefore these things are very attractive to us, because we've forgotten who we are, what the spiritual atmosphere is like, what bliss we're feeling there, Vaikuntha, no anxiety. We've forgotten all that, so anything better than this is great, right? Anything better than that, than a 100-year lifespan is great. Anything better than anything between 20 degrees and 30 degrees is right, is great, isn't it? That's all we're thinking of. But when we become a little broad-minded and hear that Krishna's directly or indirectly through his devotees is explaining the whole cosmic situation. He said, there's no need to know that in detail all these things separately, he tells Arjuna. There's no need to know all of these things that are separated from me. No need, because he said, know that all these great, by a spark, by a portion of my energy, I enter into them and maintain them and sustain them. That's why they're attractive, because I'm actually sustaining them. Without me, they wouldn't exist. And that's just a fragment of my expansion, a supersoul. Expansion of expansion of expansion. So what to speak of the Lord himself and his full-blown youth and the original personality of Godhead as he is. Huh? Fantastic. Can't describe that. Try. But that's the situation. So if we hear that, then we'll get some more. You know, Gop Kumar did it. The other sages did it. The acharyas have done it. They said we can do it. They said they'll give us all assistance. We just have to be faithful to them and hang on to their instructions, and they'll pull us through, even though we're unqualified. They'll do it. So like that, we'll, so we have to know what is at the end. We have to know the prime, the rasgula, what that is. Otherwise we'll accept something lesser. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. There's an idea to have this have on the Vedic planetarium. When we display all the one idea was to have Gop Kumar and everyone going up, the narration of here he goes here, and this is, and you get a whole description from here, then it's bona fide, at least for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they can't refute. Vivo. Any comments? Further details and realizations? Arrivo.